Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on a new film series about the history of Southern Humboldt, state funds for suicide prevention efforts being diverted, and this week's sports report. But first, some quick local updates. This is KMUD News. In Southern Humboldt, in the Miranda area, there was a hit-and-run incident involving a male pedestrian today, June 26th. The victim was hit by a black BMW shortly before 7 a.m. Here's audio from a witness to the scene.
So I look out the window and I just see a dog, across the street, like outside of a black BMW, just jumping. And barking, and the young woman was screaming at the guy that's driving. Well, I couldn't see the guy, but I just saw a young woman screaming, really upset at the guy driving, or parked in the driver's seat. I saw the man that initially got hit, I saw him, walking, minding his own business. He looked back, to see if everything was okay, but he was just minding his own business, walking. And then in the moment that, I closed my curtain back up, 2 minutes later, I hear the tire screeching, and I hear somebody, I hear a loud thump and a scream, and I thought it was a young lady who got hit, but, no, it was the man. I didn't catch his name. And for a moment, I thought the dog was the elder's, but it wasn't. It was the guy's dog. And, the young lady said that the guy punched the dog, and she was yelling at him about that. Well, not punching the dog, and then he left her, too, and he almost hit her as well.
Multiple CHP units responded to the hit-and-run incident, and by 7:25 a.m., the male driver of the black BMW had been arrested and was later taken to jail. Also in Southern Humboldt, the Salmon Creek Fire Protection District is hosting their annual barbecue tomorrow, Saturday, June 27th. There will be a potluck and speeches on the state of the fire department and updates for residents. Festivities will start around 1 p.m. and will be held at the Salmon Creek Community School. We also have updates to share from the Humboldt Sheriff's Department on the Miranda's Rescue investigation and the excavation that's been occurring on the Miranda's Rescue property for multiple days this week. During the excavation, investigators recovered 117 intact canine remains from two dig sites. An additional 21 canine skulls, hundreds of bones, and 6 loose microchips were located in another dig location where the intact animals were discovered. The 117 intact dogs were in various stages of decomposition. 70 of the dogs were x-rayed on site, and many of those animals showed evidence of bullet fragments. Most of the dogs recovered were microchipped. Analysts are currently reviewing the data obtained from the microchips and are working to identify the dogs associated with those chips. All items were collected as evidence and will undergo further examination as part of the ongoing investigation. 70 of the dogs were examined on-site by the USDA and forensic veterinarians. Based on those examinations, investigators preliminarily determined the cause of death for many of those animals to be gunshot wounds. Due to time constraints, the remaining 47 dogs were not examined on scene. All 117 dogs were collected as evidence, and Sheriff Hansel has stated that the investigation is far from over. And next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. A new documentary series on the history of Southern Humboldt's Back to the Land movement and subsequent cannabis industry has released its first episode. We spoke with the filmmaker behind the project to learn more. KMUD News reports. Seth Ferranti is a filmmaker with an interesting backstory. Originally from Southern California, Seth developed a taste for cannabis and counterculture in his teenage years. and was quickly drawn to the Emerald Triangle and Humboldt County by the region's beauty and superior production of high-quality cannabis. In an interview with KMUD News, Seth Ferranti spoke of organically discovering Humboldt County and its unique marijuana industry.
Yeah, because back then, you know, the only time we used to get good weed was like in the fall when they would harvest it up north, you know, because the rest of the time we were getting the Mexican bud, which, you know, the brick weed, which was like brown, seedy, maybe 3 to 5% THC, you know, back like we're talking like 84, 85. So it was a completely different world. And then every fall, you know, like this real nice, we used to call it kind bud. Like you didn't even know the strains or nothing. You just called it kind bud. So this nice, good green weed would appear, you know, and the straight, you know, I remember the first strains I started hearing was probably like Northern Lights and stuff, probably like, you know, 87, 88. But it was just this really good green piney bud, and I would get it. And I was like, man, like, where is this from? And they'd be like, you know, oh, that's from Humboldt County, the Emerald Triangle.
Seth's life was dramatically changed when he was imprisoned for 21 years after being caught dealing marijuana and LSD. After his release from prison, Seth became a writer, including for internationally known publications like Vice and Penthouse. It was during this time that a producer friend introduced Seth to Johnny Casale, a Humboldt grower who had also done time in a federal prison for cannabis-related charges. In our interview, Seth Ferranti spoke of how connections made through Johnny Casale led to the creation of Tangled Roots, a new documentary series about Humboldt County's Back to the Land movement and subsequent cannabis industry that developed alongside it.
He started introducing me to all his friends, you know, Jason at Ridgeline, Teddy at Canna Country, Eric and Jill at Hogwash Farms, Tommy and Karen Hessler from Amherst Farms. You know, they're like the OGs. They've been up there like since like 1969 or something, you know, like going on 50 years. They're like the real, like those are like Johnny's OGs, you know what I'm saying? So they're like the real OGs because they've been up there so long growing weed. You know, Johnny was introducing me more people, and the people I was filming were introducing me more people. And then people, like as I was posting like some behind the scenes stuff, people on social media started reaching out. So Johnny kind of introduced me to like all the Southern Humboldt, like legacy farmers, like the people that were born and raised there. But then through social media and some of my Grateful Dead friends, I started meeting all the Grateful Dead farmers where maybe they weren't born there, but, you know, they've been there like 20, you know, sometimes 20, 10 years, you know, like they had the same outsider feeling about Humboldt that I did, you know, like it was this magical, mystical place with these giant redwood trees where they grew all the best marijuana in the world.
Seth Ferranti also spoke on how Humboldt County's native population played a large part in supporting the early Back to the Land movement. And native growers play a prominent role in the first episode of the Tangled Roots documentary series.
When I interviewed Tommy and Karen Hessler, they talked about like when they first came there, like in 1970 or 71, you know, that they went out there and they're like still on the same land. Like they built their whole place. You know, they were like true homesteaders, Back to the Landers, whatever you want to call it. But they said one of the people that helped them survive when they first went out there was a Wailaki Indian. And I think Tommy or Karen, they even mention it, you know, but he would come, like he showed them how to hunt. He just showed them a lot of stuff, like how to live off the land.
The first episode of the Tangled Roots series, which focuses on the first few decades of Humboldt County's Back to the Land movement and cannabis industry, is available now on Vimeo. Here's a few quick audio clips from the currently released film.
Everybody was trying to leave a lot of stuff behind, you know, city living and suburbia and college and all those demands, and create something brand new. We can actually afford a piece of land here because most of it was logged and left, and so a lot of it was really cheap back then.
From my experience growing up here, late 60s, early 70s, I can still remember the town was really really peaceful, really quiet, really small, but logging was a big main industry here. And you know, it was, you saw loggers running around town, you saw you know, logging trucks everywhere, you saw people involved in the logging business everywhere. And I remember riding my bicycle around town in the early 70s. All of a sudden, these buses started showing up, these old dilapidated, as we were kids, we go, man, what is that? And someone said, oh, that's a hippie bus.
The herb allowed people to have you know, more free time. You know, we weren't just slaves to jobs. You know, everybody worked, did something, but there was, you know, a real community spirit built around that.
Filmmaker Seth Ferranti also spoke on how those involved in the early cannabis industry in Humboldt County created their own unique communities and subcultures by working collaboratively for common goals.
I show the culture, I show the people, like, you know, the Mateel Center, you know, the volunteer fire departments, you know, Reggae on the River. I mean, they went up there and they created all these people, they created culture out of nothing. I mean, yeah, all this culture was funded by weed. You know, all the businesses, everything, because if you go drive through Garberville today, it's like a ghost town because there's no marijuana money anymore. All these, everything was funded by the marijuana money. But, you know, these weren't like sinister criminals who, like, you know, were gun-toting criminals who, like, got their money and hoarded it or sent it somewhere else. They put all the money they made back in their community.
Seth also spoke on what's to come in episode 2 of the Tangled Roots film series, which will focus on Humboldt County's experience with the war on drugs. He also explained why we'll have to wait until at least next year for the release of the second episode.
Episode 2 is going to go right into the war on drugs. Like, we're going to talk about the war on drugs. We're going to talk about the helicopters. We're going to talk about what happened. We're going to talk about how, you know, people like the Hesslers and all these other families, how basically, like, they were terrorized. Fortunately, I just did, like, about 7 months in prison. I got popped on I-80 with 437 pounds of weed at the end of October 2024. So I'm actually on parole in a halfway house right now. But, you know, I'm getting back on my feet. I'm officially out December 18th, so I'm going to get back to work on it. But I hope, you know, I'm hoping to have all the whole series finished by next year, but, you know, we'll see.
The first episode of Tangled Roots, the true story of Southern Humboldt's legacy farmers, is available for purchase on the Vimeo app and website. Just search for Tangled Roots, the true story of Humboldt County via the Vimeo app on all platforms. We'll also post how to find the film to the KMUD News social media channels. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Suicide is a priority issue for Humboldt County's health divisions, but their efforts will be impacted by diversion of state funding. Daniel Mintz reports.
At a time when Humboldt County is trying to carry out suicide prevention, state funding for it has dropped. The funding reduction was the most prominent point of discussion as the Board of Supervisors fielded an update on behavioral health planning at its June 23rd meeting. A range of mental health services are funded through the state's 1% tax on annual income over $1 million. Presenting a new 3-year plan for the county's use of its share of the funding, Behavioral Health Services Act Coordinator Oliver Gonzalez said the voter approval of Proposition 1 doesn't mean there's more money for mental health services. He said, quote, "One emphasis I really wanted to call out here is Proposition 1 is not an expansion of dollars. If anything, it's a reduction of 5%. Prop 1, the Behavioral Health Services Act, replaces and overhauls the former Mental Health Services Act. Here, Gonzalez explains how the change diverts funding for suicide prevention.
One definition that they added in Proposition 1 regulations is that moving forward, counties need to focus on a type of prevention known as indicated prevention. That's the type of prevention where it needs to be focused to BHSS early intervention participants. It needs to be targeted to people who have elevated risk, essentially. That is a really different pivot from what the MHSA would allow in the past, which we would know be known as universal prevention, which is no longer allowable under the BHSA. Universal prevention is defined as the broad population-wide efforts not tied to individual risk. I wanted to call that out because for here in Humboldt County and many other counties, that affects a multitude of different programs, such as our suicide prevention program that we've had a partnership with our public health department. That's a program that unfortunately fits under universal prevention and we cannot fund under the BHSA moving forward as a result.
The 5% the county loses instead goes to the California Department of Public Health as explained in this exchange between Supervisor Natalie Arroyo and Behavioral Health Director Emmy Botchler-Rogers.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on that suicide prevention piece? So it's not an allowable use under BHSA, but how are we anticipating kind of shifting to, I know suicide prevention is one of our community public health areas of focus. Could you say a little more about that?
I can just comment that the intention in part is that 5% doesn't come to us, and CDPH is able to use some of that to fund those activities through local public health jurisdictions. Whether or not that's sufficient, I think, is still being determined, but yes, it's meant to be diverted in a way that still funds those activities, but maybe at a lesser amount or in different ways.
So how are we envisioning continuing to support that suicide prevention work kind of while we wait to see how they manage to fund it?
We're not, through behavioral health, able to fund. I think we spent $300,000 per year about of MHSA funds. So that can no longer come to us, to public health. Public health is aware, and there's conversations about whether or not funding from CDPH will support that. But it won't come directly from behavioral health at this time.
Humboldt County's suicide rate is more than twice as high as the state's. According to a county report, between 2014 and 2023, there were 338 suicides, an average of 34 per year. That calculates as 24 to 25 suicides for every 100,000 residents, which is far higher than the state's rate of 10.7. The county's suicide prevention efforts were discussed here by Assistant Public Health Director Michelle Stevens at Arroyo.
CDPH took a lot of stakeholder feedback around what to do with that 5%. And so it not only did it fund public health departments, it also funded other CBOs and other entities too. And so part of what they want is a requirement there to have a suicide prevention plan with that funding. So every county health department has to have a suicide prevention plan in use of that funding in addition to whatever else it might fund. So they're doing an allocation formula for what counties might receive, and that's part of the requirement. And it has to be related to your CHA and your CHIP, your county health assessment and your improvement plan. So it's definitely on their radar around the suicide prevention work, and it's going to be a requirement for counties to have that too. So
thank you. I'm so concerned about it here.
Yeah.
Because of our data around suicide. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure you all care very deeply about this. I just don't want to let it go.
The effect of the funding shift remains to be seen. Botchler-Rogers said, quote, "Within behavioral health over the last couple of years, we've done really robust efforts around suicide screening and adopted tools and policy around doing that in ways that are very diligent." And she added, "We are really addressing suicide as directly as possible." In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Here's Ray Hamill with this week's KMUD News Sports Report.
Three different local Little League associations were crowned district champions this week as a busy month in Ute baseball continued here on the North Coast. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the local Little League All-Stars in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including why it was a busy week for the Humboldt Crabs, how the local teams fared at the annual Northern Humboldt Giants American Legion Tournament, who College of the Redwoods will honor at this summer's sports dinner and auction fundraiser, how recruiting has been going for CR football, and why it was a big weekend for local motorsports fans. But first up, three different county Little League associations enjoyed big weeks in what was a busy few days in local All-Star Tournament action. The District 10s and 11s played their All-Star Tournaments in McKinleyville, with both championship games taking place on Tuesday evening. The 10s got the today's action started when Eel River faced off against McKinleyville for the championship, with the Eel River All-Stars winning 11-4 to secure a second straight district title. Eel River and Redwood Empire would play each other later in the day in the 11-year-olds championship game, with Redwood Empire prevailing for the second straight year and winning 3-0. Rounding out a busy week in local Little League action, the McKinleyville Junior All-Stars also won their district tournament on Tuesday evening in Fortuna. McKinleyville rallied to overcome a late deficit and won 13-5. All three of this week's district champions will continue their seasons at the upcoming section tournaments. It was also a busy week for the Humboldt Crabs. The local summer collegiate team played 6 games between Friday and Wednesday. Over the weekend, the Crabs welcomed the Stockton Pearls to the Arcata Ballpark for a 3-game series. They opened with a 10-2 win on Friday, but the visitors would take Game 2 the following night by a score of 12-10. Sunday's series rubber match was an exciting one, and it took extra innings to separate the two clubs, with Colton Boardman of the Crabs securing the series win with a walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the 10th inning for a 9-6 victory. The Crabs continued a busy week when the Marysville Giants traveled to Arcata. The Crabs won 8-1 on Tuesday and then swept a Wednesday night doubleheader, winning 4-0 and 14-7 to go to 18-3 on the summer and 4-2 in the Pacific Empire League. The Crabs will be back in action at the Arcata Ballpark on Friday night when they close out their series against the Giants before hosting the Lincoln Potters on Saturday and Sunday. In other local baseball news this week, the Northern Humboldt Giants hosted their annual 17U's tournament over the weekend. The 3-day, 8-team tournament featured 4 local clubs and was won by Loesch Baseball Academy. The Humboldt Eagles won 2 of their 3 games in tournament play to lead the local teams in action, while the Giants, Southern Humboldt 76ers, and Wild Cactus all finished up 1-2. Switching gears, this week College of the Redwoods announced details of the school's upcoming annual dinner and auction sports fundraiser. The 22nd annual event will take place on campus on Thursday, August 13th from 5 to 9pm. This year's event will honour a pair of former CR football players who have gone on to achieve great success since their playing days with the Corsairs. Current Ferndale High football head coach Clint McClurg will be honoured, along with Pittsburgh Steelers assistant defensive coach Sean Howe. McClurg played defensive back for CR back in the mid-90s and earned JC All-American honours. Since then, he has enjoyed plenty of success on the sidelines at Ferndale High School, where he has guided the Wildcats to a pair of North Coast Section Championships and the program's first ever state championship in 2023. Howe also has made a name for himself in the coaching ranks. After playing defensive end for CR in 2000 and 2001, he has coached at several collegiate programs, including Humboldt State, USC, and Tennessee, before serving as defensive coordinator at Montana State University, where he helped lead the Bobcats to the 2025 FCS National Championship. This year, he joined the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff. Tickets for the annual fundraiser are available through the CR website. In more local college football news, it's been a busy spring on the recruiting trail for CR head coach Jason White and his staff. Several HDNL standouts are joining White's team for the upcoming season, including a trio of talented St. Bernard's Crusaders and 2 talented Fortuna High running backs. Kavi Bolden and Mako Limone will feature in the offensive backfield for Redwoods this fall, and White expects both of them to play key roles for his team after outstanding high school careers. Bolden, who will also compete in track and field for CR, was named co-MVP of the Big Four last fall and should only continue to impress on the college fields. St. Bernard's defensive ends Colton Hall and Jasiri Bailey have also committed their futures to CR, along with Crusaders playmaker Karan Devlin, who will likely play receiver for the local community college. 2-time Little Four MVP Tanner Pigeon of Ferndale has also committed to play for CR and will battle for the starting quarterback spot, while Arcata's Nathaniel Stiles will play on the offensive line and his Tigers teammates Miguel Obizo and Messiah Love will play defensive back. Hoopa's Ethan Obi also is joining White's team and will play linebacker, along with Eureka's Bryson Mismash, who will play running back, Del North's Dane Brown, who will play on the defensive line, and Fortuna's Michael Shaw, who is expected to play at receiver. Redwoods opens the new season at San Jose in late August and will host Reedley at the Redwood Bowl in the team's home opener on the first Saturday of September. And rounding out another busy week in local sports, it was a big weekend for North Coast Motorsports fans at the Redwood Acres Raceway. The second racing event of the season took place over two nights, including the first annual Jim Walker Fair Classic in the late models division. Jerry Peterson and Brandon Barnwell took the checkered flags in the two late models main events on Saturday night. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
Here's the latest information from Caltrans for those traveling around our region this weekend.
This is a Caltrans Sister Juan Road Information Bulletin for Lake of Mendocino County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, June 26th. In Lake County on 175, expect delays from Snead Drive to Evergreen Drive. And in Mendocino County on 1, expect delays in Point Arena near Main Street. Expect up to 10-minute delays south of Elk. Expect up to 30-minute delays south of Westport at the Boots Beach Trailhead to the Overlook. Expect delays at the Wages Creek Bridge and near the Juan Creek Bridge. On 20, expect delays west of Willits. On 101, expect overnight delays in Hopalin. The Moss Cove rest area is closed for repairs. On 128, expect delays near Mountain House Road. On 162, expect up to 10-minute delays from east of US 101 to Covelo. On 175, expect delays east of Hooper Ranch Road. On 271, expect up to 10-minute delays near Dimmock Road. This is a Caltrans Sister Juan Road Information Bulletin for Humboldt County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, June 26th. On 36, expect up to 15-minute delays near Carlotta. Slide removal continues west to Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park. Check Caltrans Sister Juan social media for updates. Expect delays west of Maple Grove and at the Butte Creek Bridge. On 96, expect delays from north of Willow Creek to north of Hoopaw. On 101, expect up to 10-minute delays north of the Mendocino County line. Expect delays north of Warwick. On 200, expect up to 10-minute delays near Azalea Avenue. On 211, expect up to 15-minute delays from Singley Road to Van Ness Avenue in Ferndale starting on the 30th. On 254, expect delays north of Wyatt. On 299, expect up to 10-minute delays east of Blue Lake and from Chesham Road to west of the Redwood Creek Bridge. This is a Caltrans Sister Juan Road Information Bulletin for Delner County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, June 26th. On 101, expect up to 15-minute delays at various locations from Klamath to north of Last Chance Grade and near Hamilton Road. Expect up to 20-minute delays weekdays in Smith River from Rowdy Creek Road to east of Denny Lane. On 199, expect up to 10-minute delays near the Middle Fork Smith River Bridge.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporters for this broadcast, Ray Hamill and Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmo.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.